Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Genealogy has been a passion for a lot of people for a long time, searching through graveyards and papers and family tales to sketch the family tree. The internet turbocharged genealogy. Now, family tree crowdsourcing is exponentially exploding our connections, offering up 40-second cousins that can be quite surprising. This hour, On Point, crowdsourcing genealogy toward one big family tree. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you a genealogy nut? Have you found your family's roots on the internet? Are you ready to link up family trees? And what do we learn about ourselves when we find our roots? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first today from New York is A.J. Jacobs, journalist, author, editor-at-large for Esquire magazine, best known for his lifestyle experiments from trying out radical honesty to ultra-fitness. Now he's turned his attention to his own family tree writ large, and he's planning a record-breaking family reunion of thousands of cousins in 2015. His article, Are You My Cousin?, ran recently in the New York Times. You can find a link at our website, onpointradio.org. A.J. Jacobs, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Thanks. Great to be back, Tom.
What threw you out into this giant ocean of cousins?
Well, a few months ago, I got an email from a guy in Israel, and he said, you don't know me, but I'm your 12th cousin. And he said, I have a family tree with 80,000 of your other cousins. And I didn't know what to make of this. You know, part of me said, I have enough trouble handling my current family. Do I really want 80,000 more relatives?
Yeah. You know?
But another part said, this is amazing. I'm connected to all these people. So I immersed myself in genealogy, and I realized this field, which I had always thought was this very staid, quiet field, is going through an amazing and controversial revolution. And partly it's because of genetic testing, and partly it's because of what you mentioned. The internet is allowing us to crowdsource these family trees. So you have thousands of people working on the same tree. And you've got these mega trees. I'm part of a tree on a site called Genie, which has 75 million people. And if you believe the research, and we can talk about the accuracy, I'm distant cousins with everyone from Albert Einstein to Gwyneth Paltrow. So I said, wouldn't it be fun to throw a party, get Gwyneth to bring her vegan turkey to casserole, and unite all these amazing people, prove that the cliche is true. We're all one big family. And so I'm excited. It's going to happen in 2015. There are going to be speeches. It's a fundraiser for Alzheimer's. And you're invited, Tom.
Who knows? We're 99th cousins. Well, how's it work? What's the digital connecting going on that makes possible a family tree of 75 million people?
Well, several sites like Genie and WikiTree have these algorithms. So you put up your family tree, and I have my uncle Henry Sussman in the tree. And if they find that Henry Sussman could be the same as a Henry Sussman in another tree.
Because you put up the birth dates at the same time, I assume.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Then they suggest maybe you want to merge trees. And if both sides agree, then you merge trees, and it just keeps merging and merging into these million tentacled monsters. And it's fascinating. I mean, it's fun just for the novelty factor of putting in a famous person to see, you know, oh, my kids like art, so I'm related by 19 degrees to Jackson Pollock. Maybe that's where they got it, through marriage.
If any name and birth date on my family tree matches up with any name and birth date, even at the farthest twig on your family tree, suddenly they're connected.
That's it. Well, you have to approve the connection because you don't want to connect two people who have the same name who are not the same person. And that's one of the challenges.
Yes.
But yes, this tree is 75 million people that are all somehow connected, and the connections can be insane. You know, Ben Franklin is my 46th cousin, 14 times removed, something like that. So it it's amazing just how big these trees have grown.
I mean, you've got everybody. You've got Albert Einstein in here, and you've got Gwyneth Paltrow, and you've got, as you say, Ben Franklin, maybe by marriage, somewhere out on this giant sprawling family tree, by marriage to Paul McCartney. How cool is that?
I want him to play at the reunion.
Right.
He's my cousin, so he's got to.
Bring him on.
And I'm not alone. You know, everyone has these connections, so I'm not boasting that it's just me. But it is a lot of times through marriage. But the cliche is true. You know, you go back far enough and we are all related.
But at a certain point, what does it matter? I mean, you describe here on this family tree that, why, for heaven's sakes, you're related to the former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg. He's very close. He is apparently your wife's great uncle's wife's first cousin once removed's husband's uncle's wife's son's wife's first cousin once removed's husband's brother's wife's nephew. What the heck? What does it matter if that's what he is to you?
He's practically my brother. Yeah, he hasn't lent me any of his money yet. Well, I think there are a couple of reasons why we should care. One is that it really helps to bring history alive. When I tell my kids, you know, that they are distantly related to Albert Einstein, he's not just some old dead white guy. He's, you know, cousin Albert, and they got interested in what he did. So it brings history alive. There is some scientific value, a lot of it actually, because this is going to be an unprecedented history of the human race. And so there's already scientists from MIT looking at this world family tree for insights about disease inheritance and human migration. And finally, my hope, and I admit this is idealistic, but when we realize we are all cousins, we are going to treat each other with just a little bit more kindness and compassion. And I've seen this anecdotally on these massive trees. And just to give you one quick example, it's a little trivial, I know, but it shows how this works. I found out, I'd always found the TV personality Judge Judy to be quite abrasive.
Yes.
Do you know her?
And, yes, of course.
But I found out she's my 11th cousin, three times removed. So I started to think, well, maybe let's give her the benefit of the doubt. Maybe
she's a sweetie pie now. Or
yeah,
at least you're
underneath.
More open to her
exactly.
Peculiarities. Yeah.
And I've heard this all around from other people on these crowdsourced trees. That, you know, you have this strange, it's just another way to connect to someone.
A.J. Jacobs, he's got all kinds of relatives he didn't know about through these algorithmically connected family trees. Sites up doing that now. It explodes genealogy in all kinds of directions, kind of goes to the old saw that, you know, sooner or later we're all related if you go back far enough. A big family reunion of thousands, he hopes, coming up in 2015. A.J. Jacobs, stand by in New York. I want to get a more conventional genealogist's perspective on what's going on with genealogy. Judy Russell joins us right now from Woodbridge, New Jersey, certified genealogist, member of the Board of Trustees of the Board of Certification for Genealogists. She blogs at her website, legalgenealogist.com. She was a keynote speaker at a huge genealogy conference just last week in Salt Lake City. Mormons, very, very big in genealogy, and Judy was there, joins us from New Jersey. Judy, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
So what do mainline genealogists think of this new world of crowdsourced, interlocking, algorithmically connected family trees?
You know, the fact of the matter is that we're as much enthusiastic about this as AJ is. I'm just a little disappointed that AJ and I are not 11th cousins.
Maybe you are. Wait, one more tweak of the algorithm and you may be.
You know, we've got a year and a half to figure it out, Judy. We're going to figure it. You're coming.
Further back than that. Darn it. I ran it through WikiTree and
okay.
We just don't match.
Okay, you're the genealogist. We believe you. Look, here's my question. Historically, whatever that means here, my sense of people pursuing their genealogy is maybe not to figure out their 99th cousin, maybe just to figure out the more direct line of descent to see if they could find a narrative or patterns or interesting stories to tell their children. Do we care about the one world family tree?
They do and they don't. I mean, we all have, I think, this kind of dual view of the situation. The first is, of course, we're all deeply concerned and interested, and I swear it's hardwired in our genes that we want to know who we are, where we come from, what our connection is to the big historical events of life. You know, what does it mean to be, okay, you got Valley Forge. That was a fascinating aspect of American history. But it doesn't mean nearly as much as when you find out that your fourth great-grandfather was there.
Mm-hmm.
and actually lived through that winter with George Washington. So it changes your relationship to the world. We have people who have been adopted. We have people who have lost connections with their families, and they want that sense of being rooted in the family that they came from. So you have that very deep personal connection. But we wouldn't be in genealogy if we weren't interested in the kind of bigger picture. What does it mean to be Irish? What does it mean to be German? What does it mean to be American?
What does it mean to be related to George Washington or Marie Antoinette? What about yours, Judy? You must have traced it back. AJ, with all this crowdsourcing, has Albert Einstein somewhere in his family tree. Who have you got, Judy?
You know, mine are kind of boring. I've got farmers and preachers and an occasional criminal.
The criminals much like
are
the
my
rest
favorite
of us.
Ones.
Okay.
You know, I don't have particularly the connections to the famous people. My father was a German immigrant, came to the United States in the 1920s.
Yeah.
So what I would like to know more about are those sorts of roots.
Do you see technology opening all this up to more people these days?
Without any question whatsoever. There are many, many more people getting involved in it, many more people who are contributing their own information that we can all share.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about genealogy, crowdsourced genealogy in particular, and our expanding obsession with the big family tree. A.J. Jacobs has been writing about it recently. I think we can expect more to come from him on this front. He's planning a huge family reunion with algorithmically connected family trees, the many cousins of A.J. Jacobs. In 2015, his piece, Are You My Cousin?, was in the Times a few days back. He's author of Drop Dead Healthy, The Year of Living Biblically, the Guinea Pig Diaries, and is with us today from New York. Judy Russell is here as well, big genealogist. She blogs at her website, legalgenealogist.com, also a professor of law at Rutgers University. Lots of people are into it, Mormons in particular. It goes right to some of their doctrine. FamilySearch.org is a do-it-yourself website for building your family tree, finding relatives living and dead, run by a nonprofit from the Church of the Latter-day Saints. Here's an ad of theirs you'll see from time to time on TV.
What's your story? It's an important question. Why? Because you're part of a much bigger story that stretches back through history, connecting to hundreds of fascinating lives and events that come together in the person you see in the mirror every morning. That makes it a story worth exploring. It can teach you about who you are, where you belong, and who you might become.
Well, that's a big promise there. A.J. Jacobs, we've got people responding in all kinds of ways here on Facebook. Scott says, thinking about 42nd, 46th cousins, says at some point, Scott writes, we're all related to Kevin Bacon, right? That's as big as I need it. You know, how many degrees of separation from Kevin Bacon?
Right. My reunion is sort of like that, but I, in this case, I'm playing the role of Kevin Bacon. So, and by the way, all 7 billion members of the human family are invited to my reunion. It's just that confirmed relatives get a bracelet. So please email me and we'll figure out how we're related.
Talk
just
to us for a second.
Website.
Yeah, about the, you can give us that. We want your cousins to be told. What's the website?
Ah, fantastic. It's ajjacobs.com, one word, or my email is aj@ajjacobs.com.
Okay.
So,
cousins of AJ, bring it on. The genetic testing piece of this on the vast scale, pushing genealogy into new terrain. What's going on there?
Well, that again is opening everything up because there are several services now, and they're all about $100. And you can—I did one called 23andMe. I'm doing another called Family Tree DNA. And when I got the results, it has—it presents over 1,000 relatives who are genetically linked to me, and you know, I've emailed some of them inviting them, and I've gotten mixed responses. You know, some say, is this a scam? But some are very interested. They say, oh, I want to meet all these other people. So it is a whole other, and I think you have another guest coming up who knows a lot more about the DNA than I do, but also seeing deep into your ancestry using these DNA tests.
What can you learn genealogically from a saliva test?
Well, you can learn who your relatives are, you know, and then you can also learn where you came from. So we all came from Africa in the beginning, so some goes back to that. I found out that I have a percentage of Scandinavian ancestry, which is very helpful in this weather up in
right.
the Northeast.
Let it snow, right?
Exactly. So that's just another. Combining those two, combining traditional genealogy, where you use documents like census and marriage certificates, combining that with DNA is incredibly powerful. And that is, as you say, turbocharging this field.
Among other things, you found out that your wife is your distant cousin. Oh, great.
I hope. I was a little disturbed, but yes, she is. Well, it said distant. We don't know exactly. I'm trying to track down our common ancestors. Hopefully it's a couple hundred years ago. But yeah, I'm a Jewish, and if you're an Ashkenazi Jew, basically all Ashkenazi Jews are related to each other. Estimates vary, but about fifth or sixth or seventh or eighth cousins. So yes,
so it's
I
all
am
cousins all the cousins. Time out there.
That's it.
Right, Judy. What about the genetic testing face of genealogy? How do you look at that as a longtime traditional genealogist?
I love it. I absolutely love it. I have tested with Family Tree DNA, with 23andMe, with Ancestry DNA, and with Spencer Wells's Genographic Project.
But explain how it works. I mean, I can't figure out who my great-great-great-grandfather was with a saliva swab.
You can, provided that other people who descend from the same person have also tested. The fact of the matter is that you have markers in your genes that came from whoever that great-great-grandfather was. And only people who descend from that man are going to share those markers.
This gets interesting. You know, over the Christmas holiday, it was brought to everyone's attention in my family that, in fact, the first Ashbrook in the country, 1682, famous Antelope John, famous in our family tree, they've had a Native American wife who I would be descended from. Can I try and confirm whether that would be true from genetic testing, Judy?
It's possible. It depends on the line of descent. You see, there are lots of different kinds of DNA that we have in our bodies. Some of it comes down a direct paternal line, father to son to son to son. So obviously that's not going to work with a wife. But if you had a direct maternal line, mm-hmm. say that this was the wife to her daughter, 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 daughter to you.
Okay.
Then yes, you have or should have those markers in what's called your mitochondrial DNA, your mother's line DNA.
I'll have to put that to my father, who's the family genealogical authority here. Let us bring in our listeners. Anthony in Boston. Thanks for calling, Anthony. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I am absolutely delighted that this program came on, because when it did, I was actually in the process of crowdsourcing with a couple of my Piesco cousins, Italian cousins, doing some genealogy research. We've been doing it for years now, and ever since a lot of this information came online, it accelerated my own discovery, and starting a few years ago, was able to pick up some rumors in my family that our surname was actually not our true surname.
Mm-hmm.
And
very common.
The process discovered that my great-great-grandfather was an orphan from Sicily, and when his kids came over, they changed their surname coming to the United States, probably to disguise the fact that their parent was an orphan originally.
Okay.
And as a result, I've gone back to Sicily, verified this, and found dozens and dozens of cousins, and now make an annual trip back there in September, and we have a kind of a family reunion with these cousins that have been there for the last almost 100 years. I didn't know they existed, and perhaps most interestingly, they actually have some kind of story, some of the older ones, of hearing about us in the United States and what people were up to.
Anthony, we can probably well imagine this, but put it in your own words. What does it do for you to know this information, to have tracked the family tree and actually climbed back there a ways?
I think that for me it was just thrilling to know that there were these, first of all of these people that I was connected to in a place that I thought was in the past and sort of a closed door, and that they actually had memories of my family and even some very early correspondence. It was very extremely gratifying, and now I actually have this whole group of friends, cousins that I'm very close to, and we're reconnected. And because of the technology, we stay connected. We see each other. There have been a couple that have come here on trips, and I feel like I have been able to kind of enlarge my own circle of family and close people who they're now a part of my life.
That's pretty terrific. And we hear it, and life becomes richer before it. I appreciate your call, and good luck. Best regards to the cousins in Sicily, Anthony. Let me go to Charles in Clinton, Ohio. Charles, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was interested to hear this as I was driving, and I'm not driving now. But it was the internet and genealogy that allowed me to discover that my Civil War ancestor, who was killed at Gettysburg,
okay,
was buried under the wrong name for 130 years in the National Cemetery there.
Wow. How did you figure that out via the internet?
What happened was, is I'm sort of the family genealogist, and about 15 years ago, I had some time on my hands, and I said, I've heard this rumor that there was someone in our family long ago who was killed at Gettysburg. So I started doing some family research, and I just picked a genealogical site and made a post and said, here's who I am. My last name is Eikens, and I'm researching a Civil War ancestor. Does anybody know anything about this? And 2 days later, I get a post from a woman in Illinois that says, I'm researching the Eikens family, and you're talking about Simeon Eikens. And I said, and I didn't even know the guy's name. And she said, I've been researching him, and I have all his Civil War records. And I said, would you send me copies? And it turns out that she is married to someone who is descended from Simeon, who's my great-great-great uncle, his brother, who had gone to Illinois after the Civil War.
But how do you figure out online that he was buried under the wrong name? How do you get down to that level of earthiness?
Well, what it boiled down to was I looked in a book about a guy who had written a book who was an expert on the federal casualties at Gettysburg, and he had this name, Simeon Eikens. And he said, he's supposed to be buried in grave D-119 in the New York section of the National Cemetery.
Amazing.
So yeah. I said, my wife, let's go up there, because I lived in Washington, D.C. So yeah, it's only 90 minutes, so I went up there. I went to grave D-119 and discovered a different name on the headstone. It was not S-I-K-I-N-S. It was J-C Kent. So I went back to the Park Service guys and said, that's not Simeon Eikens' grave. And they said, well, that's what our records show. And so that set me off on a journey researching Simeon Eikens. And how I found this out was I eventually went to the National Archives, and I found the actual burial register from Letterman Army Hospital at Gettysburg, where he eventually died of gangrene after having his arm amputated. He was wounded on the third day and during Pickett's charge.
Yeah.
And I was able to find the actual register showing him going into the ground after he died in the hospital cemetery as S-I-K-I-N-S, but then coming out of the ground, they had somehow made a transcription error, and the name became J.C. Kens, K-E-N-S.
Yeah.
And then when they took all the bodies up to the National Cemetery, it became J.C. Kent.
That's incredible. Charles, you are a worthy descendant of your of your Civil War ancestor there. That's a real piece of work and research you've done. AJ, you can hear the adventure that comes into that kind of genealogy. It takes people on odysseys. And Judy, I wonder to you, my question, I guess, is about accuracy. I mean, you can have inaccuracies that occur like this kind of spectacular one at Gettysburg. But I also wonder about the algorithms linking up family trees, the room for mistakes there.
There certainly is room for error, and we do say that genealogy without documentation is mythology. We need the records. But what we're hoping to get in the crowdsourced trees is the documentation going along with the name and the date. It isn't enough to have your John Jones and my John Jones. They both have to be the same John Jones, born on this date, in this place, with these parents. And for that, you need the records. The census records, the marriage records, the birth and death records, the military records, even the wrong military records.
Yeah. Or track them down and set them straight, as our caller did. That's pretty terrific. AJ, what about it? You know that in a family tree of 80,000 or 50 million that's put together algorithmically, there are going to be some screw-ups, presumably. Do you care?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think these huge family trees, some branches are very well documented.
Mm-hmm.
Other branches, not at all. And so but I'm optimistic. The more people who participate, the more documentation we'll have. And you also need a group of, it can't be a free-for-all. You need a small group of people. One genealogist called them forest rangers, who roam the family tree and look for mistakes. And this is the same model that Wikipedia uses. They have a small cadre of editors who make sure things are as accurate as possible. It's never going to be perfect. It is never going to be perfect, but we can strive to be as accurate as we can.
Debbie in Buffalo, New York. Debbie, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I was wondering, I traced my mother's family back to Armagh, Ireland, as a Valentine Hollingsworth, 1632, and he had the first government in Delaware. And I wondered, but I also know that my mother's parents were, my grandfather was a full-blooded Blackfoot, and my grandmother was Cherokee and Choctaw, so I can't find a connection there. And I thought perhaps it's just they didn't keep so much letters or, you know, mail or anything.
Judy, what are you thinking as you hear that dilemma?
Well, part of the problem, of course, is that you're going to have documentation that gets lost. But the nice thing about Native American ancestry, at least in the last few generations, is the explosion of records, the development of these crowdsourced opportunities to get information. How you bridge the gap between a modern Native American descendant and an Irish ancestor, that's going to be tough. DNA may be of some assistance. Immigration records may be of some assistance. Naturalization. But it's going to be a matter of getting the documents.
There's the work to be done. Debbie, good luck in Buffalo. I mean, AJ, the biggest family reunion in history, I guess, was 4,514 relatives. What was it in France a few years back? You're trying to beat that. Are they coming out of the tree, the bushes, AJ?
Yes. In fact, I've gotten a few emails just during this show, so thank you. And I do. I plea all my potential cousins, please email me. I mean, I'm very excited about this. It's going to be a family reunion meets a county fair meets a TED conference. We've got speakers, genealogists, but also general interest speakers. Dr. Oz has agreed to participate. He's a very distant cousin. And there's going to be music, as I say. Come on, Paul McCartney. If not Paul, then I'm very distant cousins with Jimmy Buffett. So, Jimmy, you know, if you're listening, call me. But I am super excited about this. And it is going to be free and open to everyone. And again, there'll be a silent auction to benefit Alzheimer's, because that affects 60 million of the human family.
Judy, can we get world peace out of this if we're all cousins, or too much to hope for?
Well, I think Jimmy Buffett and I are cousins, so let's do it.
Okay. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about genealogy, crowdsourced genealogy, and our expanding obsession with the big family tree. Start linking together all those little trees, and you get a very big, almost family of man scale tree these days. A.J. Jacobs has been writing about it for the New York Times. His piece was "Are You My Cousin?" You can link to it at our website. He's planning a giant family reunion of maybe 5,000 cousins if he can pull it off in 2015. Judy Russell is with us. She blogs on her website, legalgenealogist.com. She was one of the keynote speakers at a huge genealogy conference last week in Salt Lake City, Roots Tech, it's called. And there she was. We'll hear in a moment from National Geographic's Genographic Project. Judy, what was big at the, what's new in genealogy at the conference you were attending in Salt Lake last week?
Well, it's a great deal of technology and bringing technology into genealogy. But I think the thing that struck me the most was when the head of Family Search talked about how many records have never been digitized or microfilmed. There are 5 billion records that have already been microfilmed by the Family History Library in Salt Lake City. The estimate is that there's at least 10 billion records out there that are still sitting in town halls and county courthouses and municipal archives all across the world.
I saw somewhere a project, an online project, I forget the name of it, where there people are also going out and digitally photographing gravestones everywhere.
Yes, Find a Grave and Billion Graves are two big sites that do that. And that's pure crowdsourcing.
Now, the Church of the Latter-day Saints Mormons have stockpiled an enormous amount of genealogical information. Are they sharing that with the world, Judy? There was some controversy a few years ago where they'd go back, and I think there was even an instance where they were baptizing Holocaust victims.
Yeah, and they do recognize that that's inappropriate, and there is absolutely no organized movement in that respect. But in terms of sharing, there couldn't be more of an effort to share. The partnerships with the Ancestry.com, with MyHeritage.com, with places like WikiTree and Genie and other crowdsourced operations, these records are being made readily available and free, which is kind of hard to argue with free.
Yeah, pull it out, share it with everybody, and off we go. Nikki in Charleston, South Carolina. Nikki, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question is in reference to minorities, in reference to really African Americans that are interested in tracing their family trees. It was ironic to hear a speaker say we all came from Africa, because it's been especially hard as an African American tracing my family lineage. Growing up in the South, families seem to have been separated for many reasons, for, you know, going out to find work.
Sure.
And things like that. So I just want to know, what advice would you give to a minority beginning the process to effectively search for their family lineage with not a lot of resources, it seems?
Nikki, let me go first to Judy with that. Stand by. Judy, what about it? I mean, the African-American history has giant disruption, slavery, all kinds of family breakage in it.
It's a lot harder than in the majority community, for sure. But it certainly isn't impossible. Between DNA testing, which opens up a lot of opportunities, and a number of records we don't stop and think about, things like the Freedmen Commission after the Civil War, even records of slaveholders themselves, can give a lot of information about families. So it's not impossible. It's hard. And I'm not going to say for a minute that it's not.
Do the online websites have good effectiveness for an African-American family who, now there were many who were free, but if they were, let's say, in slavery and therefore, you know, had all that disruption, do the online services work?
They help because, again, they make the records that are available so much more accessible by more people. And one family that maybe has manuscript records from the 1700s, making those records available online and documenting their own ownership of slaves can be the breakthrough that an African-American today needs.
A.J. Jacobs, your mega tree went in all kinds of directions. You found Jackson Pollock in there and Saul Bellow in there, only 22 steps removed, but also Quincy Jones. I mean, maybe you're getting on both sides of the race line in that big family tree, A.J.
Well, absolutely. I think that's what's fascinating about these websites is that it encompasses all ethnicities, you know, not necessarily by blood, but by marriage. And I think my generation, you're seeing more intermarriage between ethnicities than ever before. So this is really exploding, this whole idea of one big world family. I mean, just in my generation, I married a Jewish woman, but my sister married a man from Peru, and I have a Colombian sister-in-law. So you're really seeing these webs interweaving more than ever. It's a huge change.
Laura in Bloomington, Illinois. Laura, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
How are you?
Great.
I found through my McLeod ancestors on my dad's side, researching lots of books on Vikings from Scotland, the Outer Hebrides, okay. Ireland. I found out that the McLeods are descended from Harald Fairhair of Norway, King Harald. His great-grandson, Olaf the Black, had a son named Loud and a sister named Ragn. Loud had a sister named Ragnhildis. Well, Ragnhildis married a Somerled who started the MacDonald clan, and her brother, Loud, started the MacLeod clan. I've got a book here at home called The MacLeods, The History of the Clan, by a person named Grant. And it goes into the history of the Outer Hebrides, how Vikings had turned Dublin into a slave center. And my ancestors, through Harald Fairhair, were royalty. It was very...
So what does it do for you, Laura? Does it make you feel like you're part of Game of Thrones or something? Or give you a big meadow for imagination?
It's so fascinating to find out that Harald Fairhair, my ancestor, was son of King Halfdan, who was son of King Gudrod, who had married a Queen Asa, the hunting king.
The more you speak, the more royal you sound, Laura. You sound like a Viking princess walking among us. But it is exciting to see that. I mean, Judy, people are often looking for that kind of prominence in their genealogical history.
You know, we all want ancestors we can be proud of, that we can look up to, that we can feel different and special. And the fact is, if you go back far enough, we're all going to find that. We're all descended from Charlemagne. We're all descended from Niall of the Nine Hostages in Ireland. That's in our bloodline.
And one thing I love about genealogy is that you just feel the gratitude for your ancestors, because the more you research the past, the more you realize, you know, the good old days were not good at all. The good old days were hard. They were lots of disease, and they were
sure.
Smelly. They were difficult. So it really gives you a sense of gratitude for all the people who made it possible for you to be here today.
Gratitude in the sense of you can do it. We too can do it. They went through all of that. We can deal with the little spills and thrills of modern life. AJ Jacobs, Judy Russell, please stand by. Spencer Wells joins us right now. He is with director of the National Geographic's Genographic Project. He's explorer in residence there. He was also a keynote speaker at the RootsTech conference in Salt Lake City last week. Professor of Population Genetics at Cornell University, author of The Journey of Man and Deep Ancestry. Spencer Wells joins us from Ithaca, New York. Spencer Wells, thanks very much for being here.
Great to be here, Tom.
What's this Genographic project that National Geographic's got going?
Well, it's a big effort to map human migratory history, ultimately tracing back to an African origin. I've heard that mentioned a couple of times so far on the show. That's very clear by looking at genetic data that we all do trace back to African ancestors who lived there within the last 60,000 years or so. We appear in the fossil record in Africa around 200,000 years ago. We start to leave, according to the genetic information, around 50,000 to 60,000 years ago. And so we're using the tools of DNA to track how people have migrated all over the planet. And it's part of this overall effort that, of course, is the theme of the show, how we're all related to each other, how we constitute a huge human family.
But does it really intersect? As good as Judy may be, as much as A.J. Jacobs may be using algorithms, you start talking 50,000, 60,000 years ago, we're beyond reach of any genealogical ladder.
Yeah, I mean, we are...
Or are motivated. We? Maybe genetically, I don't know.
Well, we're motivated, really, in the project by, an effort to answer anthropological questions. So how did the first Europeans arrive in Europe, and how did the first people to arrive in New Zealand get there, and so on, questions like that. But as you move up into the more recent past, you do verge into the genealogical and the historical realm. And really, the goal is ultimately to make it a seamless experience, going all the way back from what you know about your recent family members, your parents, your grandparents, and so on, all the way back in time to human origins. That's the ultimate goal of what we're trying to do. And I think all the stuff that's going on with the crowdsourced genealogy is absolutely fascinating, and it plays into that.
Well, that's kind of crazy in its ambition, but wonderful. How do you make that leap? Presumably it's genetic. Are you doing cheek swabs, or what's your way to, how's it work actually?
Yeah, we do cheek swabs, and that captures a little bit of tissue from the inside of your mouth, cells from the inside of your mouth, and those cells contain your genome. We isolate out the DNA, and we hone in on markers that are very specifically about ancestry. So they tell us something about your paternal lineage, where in the world that happens to be found, your mitochondrial lineage, which is the female lineage, and markers scattered across the rest of your genome as well. And the goal is to compare to a reference database of samples that we've collected from all over the world and to map the migratory history of your ancestors. So you may know, for instance, that your family comes from Ireland or Italy, but how did they get to those places in the first place? That's really the question we're trying to answer.
And Spencer, people throw off very easily this idea that if you go back far enough, we're all related. Is that true?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, you can do a simple calculation. So if you think about how many parents do you have? You have two. How many grandparents do you have? Four. It goes up as 2 to the n, where n is the number of generations, so it doubles in every generation going back in time. If you go back only 1,000 years, that's roughly 40 human generations. 2 to the 40th is 1 trillion. That's more than the total number of people that have ever existed on Earth. Demographers estimate that might be as much as 100 billion. So what's the conundrum here? Well, it's not really 2 to the n. It's somewhat less than 2 to the n because everybody is somewhat related, as Judy said. If you go far enough back into the past, and it's only a few thousand years in most cases for people all over the world, we're all connected to each other. We're all related genetically.
A trillion. Hey, AJ, how about your little family reunion now? 5,000 people talking.
Well, I have a big space. It's at the New York Hall of Science, but I don't know if it could hold a trillion.
Oklahoma City is calling. Brian in Oklahoma, thanks. You're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's kind of odd for me. I've tried to search my genealogy. I've got family stories that say we're related to this person or that person for years. And I've gone online and done a couple of pay-for, help-you-search deals, and those have they've all essentially given me a dead end. My question is do the guests that you have on air today have any advice? Is crowdsourced genealogy maybe a way I can go, or is there some other method other than these online services that will help me prove or disprove the stories that my grandparents, my great-grandparents have told me that of people that were related?
Brian, Judy may be able to help us. How far back have you been able to go? Grandfather, great-grandfather, mother, what?
You know, great-grandfather, maybe one other generation is for me.
And he's finding a dead end. What's your advice, Judy?
I'd go two ways. One is I would definitely do DNA testing. It may help connect him to somebody who's got exactly the information that you're looking for. So DNA testing is always something that I think everybody who can do should do. The second thing is when you personally, as a beginning genealogist, reach a dead end, reach out for a professional. The Association of Professional Genealogists, the Board for Certification of Genealogists, have people who know the records, know how to access them, and may be able to guide you through some of those brick walls.
Hey, good luck, Brian. And Judy, Leah writes to us that on her father's side, she's the, paternal grandmother's side, 13th great-granddaughter of Roger Williams. So big name back in her history, but her mother's side has been difficult. Is there a gender difference in the ease of genealogical research, Judy?
Oh, boy, is there ever. You know, you guys, you got us this notion of changing our names to take on your name.
Yeah, sorry about that.
You know, it's that just fouled everything up. So tracing the maternal line is always more difficult. Because of the name changes, you're always having to look for her brothers or her father or her uncles in order to find her maiden name. So, yeah, tracing a maternal line is always a lot more work because you have to look at the men around the woman in order to get her identification.
Though genetic testing comes in more and more, and there it doesn't lie. Spencer Wells, what's your big hope here? In your deep genealogy, if I can call it that, with the Genographic Project, what do you hope we take from it?
Well, you know, there are a lot of specific scientific questions, you know, migration routes and so on. We've discovered some fascinating things, like Genghis Khan seems to be the paternal ancestor of nearly 10% of people in Central and East Asia. So he was a very busy guy in many ways.
Yeah.
But really, it's to create this seamless experience. People, as Judy said and AJ said, people are fascinated by their family history. Where do I come from? And ultimately, that is a broader human story. Where does humanity come from? And the goal, again, is to make it a seamless experience, all the way from genealogy, back through what we think of as recorded history, back to the very earliest days of prehistory.
And AJ, what's your hope here with your big family reunion and Gwyneth Paltrow's, what, vegan salad and all those? But what do you hope to take from it, get from it?
My hope is that we'll get to meet fascinating people, and we will realize we're all related, and maybe we'll treat each other with a little more compassion and kindness. I know it's a little bit idealistic, but I believe that it might come true.
Well, it's a nice idea, and we hope you have a great party. We hope you break the Guinness World Book of Records.
Thanks, you're coming. I'm tracking you
hey,
down.
Hey, find me that link, baby. Find me that link. AJ Jacobs, author of Drop Dead Healthy, The Year of Living Biblically. Look for him on Genealogy. AJ, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me back.
Spencer Wells, director of National Geographic's Genographic Project, joining us today from Ithaca, New York. Spencer, great to have you.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
And Judy Russell, she blogs at legalgenealogist.com. Check it out. Judy, you're terrific. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.